Welcome to the National Air and Space Museum. I'm James Earl Jones, and I'll be your guide through the exhibition, Star Wars, The Magic of Myth. How do you create magic? You begin with an idea, then translate it into the sights and sounds people believe. This tour will share some of the secrets behind the Star Wars magic. So, prepare to enter a galaxy far, far away.
George Lucas imagined the Force as the spiritual center of his fantasy universe. Obi-Wan Kenobi describes the Force as an energy field created by all living things. It surrounds us and penetrates us, and binds the galaxy together.
Before you stands R2-D2, the droid that started Luke Skywalker on his epic adventures. While R2's movements on the set were controlled by technicians and a person inside, his distinctive voice was developed in the studio by sound designer Ben Burtt.
R2-D2 turned out to be the most difficult sound to create for Star Wars. I worked on R2 for a year and a half. I think it was difficult because R2 had to perform and communicate without speaking a known language. So what I ended up doing was combining the baby sounds made by a human voice and the electronic sounds made on a synthesizer. I did everything very slowly, and then I sped the sounds up and made them faster. The human element gave it the sense of life, and then it was from a thinking, living machine. And the electronic element still kept his voice in the machine realm.
R2-D2 is equipped with an array of tools and gadgets. While R2-D2 is not equipped with any offensive weapons, he can use his electric shock prod to help his friends out of some tight situations.
C-3PO, a droid programmed for etiquette and protocol, was played by British actor Anthony Daniels, whose accent brought an air of refinement to 3PO's voice. In fact, George Lucas had a similar vision in mind for the elegant and refined look of 3PO's body.
I wanted something elegant and beautiful and human-like with 3PO. So I was inspired primarily by the film Metropolis, which is one of the first films I ever saw with a robot in it. And the robot in that film was very, very Art Deco, very beautiful. A lot of the Art Deco elements in 3PO relate to the ribbing on the legs, and the fixtures, like in his head, has a series of little donuts put together in descending order, which is a very Art Deco image.
Notice that one leg is a different color. There's a reason for that.
I made that leg silver so that 3PO could have a history, so it looked like he'd been around for 20 or 30 years, so it looked like he had had some adventures, and somebody had taken a leg off and replaced him.
Metropolis, released in 1926, was made in Germany by Fritz Lang. Metropolis is also like Star Wars in that both feature a robot with human-like features.
Like the heroes of early movie serials who never traveled anywhere without a loyal sidekick, Han Solo never leaves a spaceport without Chewbacca. This towering Wookiee is lovable, fierce, loyal, and intelligent. But his shaggy appearance probably surprised many filmgoers. In fact, George Lucas's inspiration for Chewbacca came from someone very close to home.
Chewbacca came from the fact that I had an Alaska Malamute when I was writing the film, a very sweet dog. And she would always sit next to me while I wrote the film. And when I'd drive around, she'd sit in the front seat. And a Malamute is a very large dog. It's like a 130-pound dog. And when she sits in the front seat, she's bigger than a human being. And she was a very long-haired dog, so she was huge. And it was that, having her with me all the time, that inspired me to have Han Solo have a sidekick who was like a big furry dog.
Star Wars sound designer Ben Burtt combined a number of animal noises to get Chewie's distinctive growl. Chewie's voice is based on the growl of a bear named Pooh, and the howls of some annoyed walruses whose pool was being drained.
This X-Wing pilot's uniform is one of the many outfits worn by Luke Skywalker during his amazing escapades. In George Lucas's story, Luke transforms from an innocent farm boy to a Jedi Knight.
In the Star Wars series, Luke is the central hero, and he goes on the classic hero's journey. In the beginning of the film, when he gets the call to go off on this quest, his first thought is about himself, his chores, the mundane things of his life, about things that he wants, the problems he'll have with his uncle. It's all centered around himself. And at the end of it, he is risking his life and getting involved in a much larger cause that goes way beyond him. And that's where he ultimately finds his satisfaction.
Luke's Rebel pilot costume is based on the International Orange jumpsuit of which branch of the U.S. Armed Services? Navy pilots wore these brightly colored suits from 1957 to 1969.
TIE fighters are the Imperial Navy's short-range starfighters. Unable to travel long distances or deliver heavy firepower, TIE fighters are most effective attacking in large numbers. Complementing this image is the high-pitched wail of each darting TIE fighter. Sound designer Ben Burtt tells how he achieved it.
The TIE fighter sound is actually an elephant screech. It's a sound of an elephant mixed with the noise that a car makes going by on a very wet highway, where you don't really hear the engine of the car, you hear the sound of the tires kicking up the water as it goes by.
The Empire's TIE fighters are easily identified by the hexagonal wings jutting from their spherical command pods. These wings gather light and convert it into energy that helps power the ship.
Luke Skywalker probably wasn't the only one surprised by Yoda's stature. Could anyone have guessed that a great Jedi Master would look like this? Yoda's character was too small to be played by a human. George Lucas says the decision to go the route of a puppet wasn't easy.
There's always this moment of doubt. Are we going to make this funny rubber puppet be a real character? But it's really through Frank Oz's talent as a puppeteer and the crafting of the design of the character that melded together perfectly that you get this suspension of disbelief and you actually begin to think of him as a real critter, a real living thing.
The idea that a small, unassuming character can possess great power isn't a new one.
It's a very classic mythological motif to take the bunny rabbit on the side of the road and turn it into a witch or a wizard of some kind, and, it's endowed with incredible powers.
What famous wise man provided inspiration for Yoda's distinctive looks? Albert Einstein. The ideas for many characters in the Star Wars trilogy originated from real people, both past and present.
Fearsome Imperial walkers are the huge assault vehicles used by the Empire to transport ground troops and speeder bikes into combat zones. Today, the movements of the Imperial walkers might all be done by computer, but when The Empire Strikes Back was made, computer animation wasn't sophisticated enough to accomplish this. Instead, effects director of photography Dennis Muren used traditional stop-motion animation and models like this one.
We made it just big enough that a person's hands could go around it to animate it one frame at a time. We patterned its motions off an elephant, shot a lot of film of an elephant walking, and made this walk the same way as a big elephant walked. And it gave a real sense of scale and mass and over-designed, you could say, technology to the whole thing. Because that's what made this whole walker machine fail. It was too big and clumsy to succeed in the battle.
To make Imperial walkers move, Star Wars creators had to adjust and shoot each model 30 times for each second of film. This type of filmmaking requires a lot of time and patience. But with today's technology, filmmakers are saving time by creating more of these complicated scenes on computers.
This orange double pod ship was part of the patrol that initially escorted the Millennium Falcon into Cloud City. Although seen only briefly in the original Empire Strikes Back, the Bespin cloud cars were the first objects to convey the gentle sweeping designs and warm muted colors about to be encountered in Cloud City. Rick McCallum, producer of the Star Wars Trilogy Special Edition, explains why certain changes were made in this scene.
One of the primary reasons that we changed the Millennium Falcon's entrance into Cloud City was basically George was never really happy with the original version. There wasn't really a subtle landing of the ship itself. We never really got the feeling that we were coming into a setting sun. So that was one of the very first shots that we actually tried to redo. We wanted people to get the feeling of the ship coming in and actually flying through the buildings. And at the same time, we wanted to use a shot of Princess Leia when she's in a balcony. So we tried to tie in some of the original footage that we had shot 15 years ago and make it all kind of work in a seamless way. So you really got the feeling of how powerful it must have been to fly into a city like Cloud City.
The orange cloud cars greet the Millennium Falcon and usher it into Cloud City on the planet Bespin. Lando Calrissian runs Cloud City as a Tybana gas mining colony.
Darth Vader never calls him by name. He speaks a total of 5 lines in the entire Star Wars trilogy. And he is on screen only a few brief moments. But despite his minor status, this bounty hunter is one of the most popular characters in the Star Wars universe. Rick McCallum, producer of the Star Wars Trilogy Special Edition, explains his popularity.
Well, I think the thing about Boba Fett that makes him so exciting is he's the ultimate anti-hero. He's everything you've always wanted to be when you're in a bad mood. He's the guy who's got the extendable boot tip blades. He's got a built-in flamethrower that he can use against any of his enemies. He's got Wookiee pelts. He's got a missile launcher. He's got range finders on his helmets. I mean, all of this stuff is so brilliant, and it's all the things that you kind of want to have whenever you're put in a situation. I think the thing that makes Boba Fett so interesting is he is such a great character to pretend that you could be. He's just so ultimately cool.
Boba Fett transported the frozen body of Han Solo on his ship, Slave One. Boba Fett's ship was inspired by the top of a street lamp.
Here's a face and body you can't forget. Jabba the Hutt, the most repulsive character in the galaxy. To display his hedonistic lifestyle, he is surrounded by a few of the 80 creatures and props from his palace. Every time this slug-like gangster and crime lord licked his lips and opened his mouth, we shuddered. And that's exactly what Ben Burtt had in mind when he created Jabba's sound.
If you take cheese casserole and you mic it up closely and run your fingers around in it, you get a watery, squishy sound. It's very gross. And we would tend to put this under Jabba the Hutt. It was kind of used for his motions of his head. But you'd find how important it is to have this kind of sound to complete the detail of the kind of characterization. So a little bit of cheese casserole can go a long ways.
Back in 1983, Jabba the Hutt was really just a complex puppet. 3 people inside controlled the head, arms, and tail, while his facial muscles and eyes were controlled by remote. This 2,000-pound loathsome worm was even assigned a full-time makeup artist.
How does Jabba dispose of his enemies in his palace? A door opens beneath the feet of Jabba's captives, and they fall down a chute into a pit, where Jabba can then watch his pet Rancor devour them.
Surprise! That's probably what Han Solo felt when he discovered that he'd been freed from the frozen carbonite by the bounty hunter, Boosh. But perhaps even more amazing was the fact that Boosh was actually Princess Leia in disguise. Classic myths have long featured women in strong roles. Star Wars has given us one. George Lucas recalls the character of Princess Leia.
I wanted to develop a character when she was a bounty hunter, of somebody that everybody respected and was afraid of. Even from the very first Star Wars, she's a very strong character. She's a senator. She's an elected official. And she's following along a tradition of her mother, who was also a leader of her people. I worked very hard in the movies to give a sense that she's a real strong, forceful character who's able to take care of herself and at the same time is a leader of large armies and whole planets.
When Leia disguised herself as the bounty hunter Boosh, she brought along a phony captive to make her disguise believable. The captured Chewie was presented to Jabba as part of a plan to free Han from the Huttese crime lord.
These palace dancers never made it into the original release of Return of the Jedi because of time and technical constraints. Only one dancer made it into the original version, but even she was quickly disposed of by Jabba the Hutt. When the Star Wars Trilogy Special Edition came out in 1997, new computer technology allowed these palace dancers to finally take the stage. Producer Rick McCall.
I think what George wanted to recreate was a place of total villainy and scum. It was a place not only that was evil, but there was always shady dealings going on. I think he was extremely frustrated by what he was able to achieve 15, 16 years ago when he actually made the film. So that was a very wonderful sequence to work on. That took approximately 6-7 months to actually complete. But it was a very important milestone for us. It was the ability to create computer-generated characters, aliens, as it were, who can seamlessly interact with live actors is a major technological challenge, and that was something that we were very proud of.
Jabba speaks Huttese, one of the alien languages found in the Star Wars universe. What real language is Huttese based on? Quechua, an Incan Indian language. Ben Burt wrote out the sounds phonetically so that the actors could learn their parts.
In creating Star Wars, the designers made very deliberate decisions about costumes and spacecraft. The designs of the Empire consist primarily of solid colors set against sleek, spare forms with technological highlights. This is evident in the designs of the Imperial Royal Guard uniform and the Imperial Shuttle model in front of you. George Lucas tells us what he had in mind when he created the look and the feel of the Empire.
In portraying the Empire, is portrayed in very hard sort of blacks and whites. Most of the sets are dark gray, and the Emperor is in a black cloak. The stormtroopers are all in white, and the royal guards are in a deep maroon, the significance of which will become more apparent when you're able to see all six films together. I tried to keep things very much in black and whites and gray tones and not to introduce very much color. The only color that's introduced into that environment is basically red or maroon, a dark maroon, which is kind of reminiscent of blood and also a very royal kind of color.
Star Wars, The Magic of Myth, was developed by the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum. The exhibition was organized for travel by the Smithsonian Institution Traveling Exhibition Service. All of the artifacts in this exhibition are on loan from the archives of Lucasfilm Limited.